Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
It is the Read the Comments edition of Sabres Live today. Welcome in. Marty's been, he's had a few bones to pick with some of these off-season lists to get us so wound up and simultaneously excited for the season ahead. And this seemed inevitable after an omission of top 20 wingers.
Yes.
So eventually our friends at NHL Network got around to laying out the top 20 centers. And lo and behold, a non, at least currently, Sabre center, Tage Thompson, is on that list. It begs the questions, many of them, including those from producer Jeff. Should there actually still be debate as to whether Tage Thompson is a center or a wing? Congratulations, Tage, on making it into the top 20 NHL centers on NHL Network.
Yeah, number 11th, right?
I don't think he was that high.
Number 18th. Yeah, 11th was Jack Hughes. So number 18th. Number one, Duffer, if you're going to do top 20 wingers, then you should only do top 10 centers because there's twice as many wingers than centers. So if you want to do top 40 wingers and top 20 centers, I think that's fine. But I'm like, you know, I only really care about the top 10, 12. Like after that, it becomes, you know, a preference. And then you have wingers that are not centers into the list, like Tage Thompson. You had the question, like, is Tim Stützle a center? And you're right. Like Tim Stützle plays wing and center. There's a lot of those debates that come into the conversation after 10. But is there still a conversation to be had going to, you know, we're less than a month from training camp now. Saying, is Tage Thompson going to be in the middle of the ice when camp starts and you have lines and you say, hey, it's Tage Thompson and Tuck and Benson? Or is it Thompson on the wing with maybe Yuri Kulik or Josh Norris and another winger? Like, there's still a conversation to be had there. Now, the comments were great when NHL Network released the top 20 list. You know the Buffalo fans jumped all over it. Except Thompson's a winger. Watch a game. Thompson hasn't played center since.
Does somebody want to tell them?
Yeah, exactly. Somebody want to tell them that Thompson is playing wing. Look, we had that same conversation when they released the top winger. And, you know, technically, a guy like Sam Reinhart was listed as a center on NHL.com, but he's playing the wing. Like, it's just, it is debatable. But the real question is here, what or where should Thompson be? What are people thinking when it comes to Tage Thompson? Is he, oh, well, maybe he could play center. Or no, he's a winger. Lindy Ruff moved him to the wing. There was a reason. His production was fine, and he will stay on the wing.
I don't even know how many ways I should attempt to re-ask this question. But is there a real scenario in your mind where Tage does play center on this team?
There's a real scenario. An injury would be probably the first thing that would come to my mind. If you go into camp, something happens to Josh Norris, Yuri Kulik, McLeod, all of a sudden you're like, hey, you know, like we're going to need help at center. But I also look at the wingers right now. You're looking at wingers, you have Tuck and Zucker. Okay, that's good. But your other wingers are Benson, Doan, Quinn. Like they are not very experienced. They're younger wingers. So are you better suited to move Yuri Kulik to the wing and have Thompson in the middle or keep Thompson on the wing and balance it all out with, you know, some experience in the middle, some experience on the wing? Mm-hmm. A guy like Tage Thompson, who has played center before for a few years, can help in that department. So I think that you asking the question, the fans asking the question, I'm asking the question, comes down to, yeah, an injury could definitely open that door. I think there's another thing that could open the door, Duffer, is Tage himself. I'm sure at the end of the season, he sat down with Lindy Ruff and Kevin Adams and talked about his season and the move from from center to wing. We've heard Tage Thompson answering that question many times now. What do you like better, center or wing? And I like center better. So is this maybe player-driven now going into camp? Santage is really wanting to get back to the middle of the ice. He's doing video. He's preparing to be better and more responsible in that position that Lindy Ruff is going to say, okay, let me give you a look. Let me give you a look at center. Because if I have a 45 to 50 goal centerman with the size of Tage Thompson and can play better defensively, I'm finding a very unique situation here. I'm not going to say unicorn. Don't want to use that word, but it's a very unique situation. So maybe there you go. Thank you, the control room that is always thinking. They press the right button. But maybe you're getting, Tage pushback a little bit saying, give me a chance. I want to be center again, and I'll be better. And maybe you could get that as well.
He did take a lot of faceoffs. I mean, he ranked inside the top 100 in the NHL as far as total faceoffs taken, even though we know how much he lined up as a winger. Now, is part of that because for the better part of the season when he wasn't playing the wing, he had a rookie playing center with him in Yuri Kulik?
I think I think it's also lefty-righty thing where, okay, you take a draw on the right side, I'll take it on the left. That goes, but you mentioned he's top 100 in faceoffs. So
faceoffs taken, not face-offs percentage. Taken.
Yeah, faceoff percentage. Faceoffs taken. If 32 teams, let's just even say top 9 forwards that take most of the faceoff, because the forward line center sometimes don't take as many. That gives you 96 centers, full time centers that are taking faceoffs.
Yeah,
and Tage. From game 38, okay, so game 38 was Dallas Stars New Year's Eve. We're getting again this year in Dallas.
Can't wait.
That was his last game as a center this year. I went back to all my game notes before the show. I went back. I'm like, when was Tage's last game where I wrote him down as a center?
Why would that have been the game? What was wrong with Yuri?
It wasn't so much – well, Tage had come back from injury, and there was the debate, like, can he be center? And then Lindy had some words with Cousins and Thompson, both being centers.
Way earlier in the year.
That was earlier in the year, but you were in a position where you didn't have much flexibility. And then he decided to put Tage on a line with Dylan Cousins, and that's what happened. Like, that's where Tage starting in 2025, the first game in January in 2025, you had Tage Thompson on the right wing with Dylan Cousins in the middle. They were playing together. But even though after game 38, Tage was technically not a center, and early in the season he missed some games and he didn't take all the faceoffs, he was still, top 100 in faceoffs taken. So that's still a lot of faceoffs, even though he's not a center.
Yeah, I think what I'm trying to impart is that, unfortunately for me and many others, it's an inexact science trying to tell the audience definitively that 74% of the time, Tage Thompson is patrolling the middle of the ice. You can't just, there's no surefire way to do this. A simple default is how many faceoffs does one take? And it's actually hilarious to just see, who took the... Do you know who took the most faceoffs last year?
In the league?
Yeah. You're going to love this.
I have no idea, no.
Superstar,
that's not Connor McDavid.
Sidney Crosby.
I guess.
Isn't it amazing, though?
Yes.
Isn't it amazing, thinking of Crosby's career, how far along he is? How he posted yet another season like he did. Like he is now, even though it's going to be 2026, he'll be poised to lead Canada into the Olympics.
Yeah.
And nobody took more faceoffs than Sidney Crosby, who had to work and work and work and work on this craft early on in his career and never shied away from doing so.
Yeah, and like, he's got different ways of taking faceoffs, like the stand up straight, the backhand, the forward, and all that.
Do you know what his percentage was last year?
Face-off percentage, he's probably 56%.
He won 57% of faceoffs. Like, this is the type of stuff people would talk about Bergeron, you know? Like, and yet,
or Ryan O'Reilly. And that's why producer Jeff put Ryan O'Reilly in the chat when you ask who took most faceoffs last year, because it was always a thing. Ryan O'Reilly takes the most faceoffs, Well, I mean, sure, he took a lot of faceoffs, but Sidney Crosby. And I have a little bit of a theory on this stuffer with Sidney Crosby. I would like to know how often Sidney Crosby gets kicked out of a faceoff, because he's obviously earned his stripes and the linesmen are probably not kicking him out as much as they should. He's a cheating centerman. I see it. I watch it. And he still gets away with it.
The two best face-off seasons of Sidney Crosby's career. 2 years ago, 58.2. Last year, 57. And these were parts of 94 and 91 point seasons, respectively.
For him, and two of the worst season for Pittsburgh as a team, right? Again, do face-offs matter to team success? Well, Sidney Crosby's won cups. Sidney Crosby has had fantastic, you know, a fantastic career. And two of his worst seasons, team-wise, with Pittsburgh have been the last 2 years. And it's his better years taking faceoffs.
In the last decade, Crosby has won 100-point season. But his next three best seasons, the last three, 93, 94, and 91 points. Holy cow.
Which is why NHL Network puts him number five on the list of the up, top 20 right? best centers.
Didn't he? I don't know where he was last year. Yeah.
But I would say yes. I mean, I have him as at number six. So I redid my list with the NHL Network list. And obviously the top three stays the same. They have McDavid, McKinnon, Draisaitl. I did have a hesitation when it came to McKinnon and Draisaitl. I was like, oof. Like, but McKinnon is just so special, right? And it's just like, McDavid, McKinnon, Draisaitl. And then at number four, the NHL Network has Barkov. And maybe it's recency bias, back-to-back cups being that you know, the great defensive center that Barkov can be. I went a different way with that. I went Eichel. And then I went Matthews. So my top five with McDavid, McKinnon, Draisaitl, Eichel, Matthews. The NHL Network had McDavid, McKinnon, Draisaitl, Barkov, Crosby. So a little bit of a different, you know, after number three in their list to my list. But Crosby comes in at number six, and Barkov, for me, comes in at number seven.
You want to go back to the center talk with Tage? Or do you want to just...
I have some numbers on Tage too, because our chat right now, like on social media, we asked, and everybody but one, Pops. You got Pops here that says center, but everybody else is saying wing. So I went and basically did the splits in game 1 through 38. Tage played 33 of those games. He missed five. He was 30 points with 18 goals in 33 games. After that, he played 43 games. He had 42 points. So it was almost a point a game on the wing, less than a point, well, almost a point a game two on center. The difference there is the team went 10, 19, and 4 in 33 games with Tage at center, and they went 21, 19, and 3 in 43 games with Tage on the wing.
Not a fair comparison.
Why do you say that? Oh, because the
Darlene missed the chunk when he was at center.
When he was at center.
And everybody says that the Darlene absence is the reason they lost 13 in a row. So you can't have it both ways, or you can, but.
Well, you can't and can. Darlene was obviously the 13 games slide and all of that. That was massive. But I'm looking at this, and if you're Lindy Ruff and you're like, okay, what are my building blocks to say, Tage, you're going to play or start on the wing? It's like, okay, your production was as good, even better on the wing, right? You score more per game on the wing. You have more points per game on the wing. The team had a better record, like at 11 games difference, 10 wins, 19 losses, 21 wins, 19 losses. Like that's a big difference. So if you're building that for Lindy Ruff to say, Tage, you're starting on the wing, I think the elements are right there. Now, if Tage has done his homework like you have, he could say, but Lindy, like we didn't have Rasmus Dahlin for 13 of those games and we lost a bunch of them. So, you know, give me a chance to play center, top line center, and have the best defenseman on the back end when I'm playing top line center, and let's see what happens. I think he could have that argument.
Right. And then there's also the argument to be made about number of wins versus number of losses once they were not technically in the race anymore. Right.
Yes.
So those matter to me because we can all read what the reality of the situation is in the standings. And then you want to go even deeper. It's like, well, that end of the season run also coincided with some unexpected, really strong goaltending from James Reimer, which is also not a reality of this situation moving forward. Honestly, Marty, the most fascinating thing that I've heard here in the opening 16 minutes is you suggesting, and it's merely just up for discussion, but like, what if Tage really is talking to the coach and the GM about, you know what, I'd really rather play center here. Like that to me is fascinating. Like that,
so, I mean, because that changes. Ruff and
since
Kevin
we've
Adams,
gone down the depth chart path.
I know, depth chart.
This could change a lot of websites' depth charts if Tage
I'm
is
telling you,
this.
If we can put out something, ooh, we saw Tage and Lindy and Kevin Adams having coffee at the corner Tim Hortons, you know, right there at Lecom Harbor Center. And they were discussing him playing center. All the websites are changing their depth chart. And what happens then, and again, the argument to say, ooh, what if you went into the season, Thompson, Norris, McLeod, 1, 2, 3 in the middle of the ice, build strong from the middle of the ice. That could be enticing to say, hey, that's what you've got. Now, what happens is on the wing, you're going to end up with your top three lines wingers available would be Benson, Kulik, Tuck Zucker, Quinn Doan, maybe. Like there's some youth. There's not, other than Tuck and Zucker, there's some youth and experience. I think that, but you could be going in with the hammer down the middle of saying, I've got Thompson, Norris, and McLeod. Now, I think the only point of conversation here is, okay, so are you okay with Yuri Kulik being on the wing, or do you prefer having Kulik in the middle and Thompson on the wing? Because those are the only two pieces, in my opinion, that would change. Mm-hmm. Like Norris is not going to play wing. McLeod's not going to play wing. Nobody else is coming in to play center. It's Kulik and Thompson. Those are your two that you can interchange. And then it changes your whole depth chart, as you said, because then I'm redoing my lines and I'm looking at something completely different.
Right. And you're already sitting there before this type of discussion with three players vying for a fourth line center role. So, it's interesting to say the least. Now, Jake also had a little add-on to Crosby and his makeup over the years.
Yeah.
Take us through when you see a tweet like this at Sabres Live claiming what Jake is claiming Crosby and Giroux went through, but just from the competitive nature, you know, do you recall this? I don't recall Giroux having surgery on two wrists, but
I don't recall him having both wrists, but I do remember the battle that Claude Giroux and Sidney Crosby have had in playoffs where, you know, there's a lot of stick swinging. But I do believe that's everybody in playoffs, right?
Like, well, this is the thing. Jake is saying that Crosby was unapologetic, stating he was simply playing to win. And this goes back to the bigger discussion that everybody has with the current Sabres team and whoever's playing the middle on your top line or top two lines. Like, doesn't this have to be the exact attitude? And to your point about how Crosby may or may not have had the leeway from officials early on because he did have a little bit of a reputation as a complainer right out of the blocks in the NHL, but then, you know, clearly overcame any perceptions and is one of the greatest of all time. Like, how do you walk that line if you're Buffalo's centerman of doing everything possible to win but not taking unnecessary penalties? You know what I'm saying, right? Because we know the regular season is different than the playoffs, and boy, would it be a tough look for somebody just trying to be better and be more aggressive and carve their path here, but constantly get called for penalties, because then you know what the public commentary is going to be. This guy's got to take stop taking stupid penalties.
Yes. Yeah. You obviously, the competitiveness of playing center is more than just be good defensively, win a face-off. Like, there's always some going back and forth, right? And there's always, like, you end up, you're Tage Thompson, you're playing the Ottawa Senators, and Brady Tkachuk's going to come and take a draw against you. Yeah. You know you're getting a cross-check. You know you're getting a slap in the back of the head. You know, and that's the way Mark Messier was like that. You know,
the worst, arguably.
The worst.
Like, arguably the meanest ever in those situations. Yeah.
He used to call it the Q-tips. And, you know, what he would do is he would use the butt end of his stick with the white tape, and he would stick it in your ears and say, like, here, I'm giving you the Q-tip. So, yeah, that's what he would do. So Sidney Crosby had to learn for a while playing alongside Mario Lemieux, who took a beating as well playing, what you need to do to, number one, be one of the best, survive, stay healthy, and two, walk that line. I have zero issues with two centers that are going at it, and after the draw, there's a shot on the wrist. So, because Crosby's taking those shots.
Sure.
He's going to have to give them. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the same thing with Tage in the middle. Now, Tage has had some injuries over the last few years, and he wasn't able to take a lot of face-offs. And then there was some concern with he had the hand injury 2 years ago. And so you got to protect that. But at the same time, you got to be the aggressor at times and not the retaliator. As you got to go in and give a shot, and then people are going to say, oh, crap. Like, I'm going to have to face off against him today. Mm-hmm. Like, when you see guys facing off against Sidney Crosby, they're not just concerned about the fact that, oh, I'm going to have to defend against Sid. They're concerned about the fact that Sidney Crosby goes into the draw doing anything and everything he can to win the draw. And he's dirty. He's chippy. Mm-hmm. He's dirty. And that's part of the game. And I think that there's a part of playing center that you have to be like that. You look at that list. Nathan MacKinnon is going to hack and whack you as much as you want. Leon Draisaitl is going to do it. Matthews and Eichel are going to do it. You go down the list. All of these centers, they're not on the list just because they can score and they're good.
I don't
good
think Jack does it, though, honestly. Jack, I mean,
Eichel's a little bit more passive, but he uses more of his strength and gets in there and plows you over.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's a lot of those guys that I wouldn't want to take a face-off against them. And if I did, I better have some extra padding because I know it's coming.
Yeah. It was funny you mentioned Brady Tkachuk stepping in to take draws. Like, it's probably an underappreciated aspect of a good winger, you know, their ability to relieve or put their team in a better position because they also have that, you know, ability to take draws. Like Brady with Stützle, like, it's shockingly low, the face-off total numbers for Tim Stützle, even compared to Tage Thompson, let alone Sidney Crosby, you know? So it's never as easy.
Like, almost a quarter of Crosby's face-offs,
right? Yeah, it was only like just over 400. I mean, you know, Crosby's up over almost 1,200, right? Like,
you did mention a player yesterday. Was it yesterday on the show or the day before? That was the first time I had seen a center switching with a winger to take faceoffs often. That's when Briere and Jochen Hest played together.
Oh, yeah.
And he was a right-handed shot.
Yeah.
Jochen was a left-handed shot. Mm-hmm. But Jochen was defensively responsible, killed penalties or whatever. And often in the defensive zone, especially if it was on my left side, Jochen would take the draw and stay down as the center. And on the right side, Danny would take the draw in because that's on their strong side, on their back end. So that was one of the first time I've seen it. And we see that often now in the NHL if you have a lefty and a righty. But the thing with Tkachuk and Stützle is they're both left-handed shots.
Right.
So why are they splitting draws, and where are they splitting their draws? That is, to me, not something that I'm paying attention, because when I watch Ottawa, I'm not saying I need two pages of notes on face-offs. But now I'll pay a closer attention because of that conversation.
You want to make Jake an honorary co-host today?
Yeah, so Jake has like an article from CBS Sports from 2014, I believe, and not 2012, the summer of 2012, where they discussed that rivalry between Crosby and Giroux and the two wrists and surgeries and all of that.
Read the quote. He said, this is allegedly Giroux. I ended up playing the series against New Jersey with one of them fractured and had to go for surgery on both of them after we were out of the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, that was, they beat Pittsburgh in 12, and then, you know, that's Claude playing, but everybody's playing hurt in the playoffs. Come on, Claude. Don't tell me you know, it was special to you.
No, but this is a great story, and it ties in with, you know, the how hard it is to be an elite center in the NHL, and NHL Network had their list of top 20 centers. Tage Thompson was on it. We tend to view Tage more as a winger right now. But maybe we're going to learn something new in less than a month when camp opens. I really appreciate Jack. Look, you say this all the time. You can't just take this. You can't just take this. You can't just be AI. You got to do your research. So, Jake, thank you for yours today.
I love it, Jake. Thanks a lot. And so they did the top 20. I was surprised that Macklin Celebrini on the list. Like, I'm like, he's not there yet, right?
Oh.
Like,
I love seeing his name.
You
on
love,
that.
Okay.
I get it.
Like Connor Bedard's not on the list. Maybe he would have been a year ago, but he's not on the list now. There's a few players that did not make the list that I think should have. There's three players that I have on my list that did not make the NHL Network top 20.
Okay.
So I don't know if you want to save that for after the break.
I do want to save it, and I will save it because I will ask a secondary question. Are any of those players New York Rangers? They're the team of the day,
yes.
And we will get to them when we come back on Sabres Live. But we also want you to make sure that you're in for Hockey Fest. It is less than a month away. It happens as part of Sabres Fan Fest. September 13th, all skill levels welcome. Hit the pavement on RJ Way down at KeyBank Center. Go to sabres.com/hockeyfest to sign up your team today. We're back after this.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
We dubbed it Read the Comments edition of Sabres Live, and we ended up reading more social media comments that first half hour than we have done in a long time, Marty. This is amazing.
So I feel like we have influenced the polls a little bit, because when I said we're getting all wing, all of a sudden now we're getting a few center. 100% healthy center. I think he's a center. Joseph says center. So I think we've influenced the other side to kind of be active now on social media.
Well, we're speaking there about Tage Thompson, and the question lingers, thanks to NHL Network and his ranking among the top 20 centers, whether Tage is in fact a center or a winger. I can only tell you this, he had a pretty prolific season against the New York Rangers last year with 5 points in 3 games. Mm-hmm. Buffalo tuned up New York on 2 out of the 3 occasions, 6-1 and 8-2. They did have a 3-2 loss sprinkled in, and they will open the season this year at home against the New York Rangers on October the 9th. However, that will not be the Rangers' first game. Their first game will have happened 2 days prior against the Penguins, and then they'll come here, and then they'll go to Pittsburgh. So the Mike Sullivan tour will be in full swing with 2 of the first 3 Ranger games against his former club. What are the New York Rangers after years of 114, 107, 110 points, and then, boom, they went down almost 30 points from that 114 down to 85 last year?
So the Rangers are probably, to me, the most changed look team since the start of last season. You think of in season who they traded. They traded Ryan Lindgren. They traded Jimmy Vesey. They traded Riley Smith. They traded Jacob Trouba. They traded Kaapo Kakko. After the season, they traded Chris Kreider. They traded Keandre Miller. Like, that is eight. Well, I went to seven players that were marquee players, in my opinion.
And fired the coach.
And fired the coach. You're right. And fired the coach. So you've got seven players and a coach that was significant to their team and their success. And the only thing that they technically brought in to replace that is Gavrikov, right? So there's a lot of youth that is going to have to fill in some big shoes with the New York Rangers. When you think of Gabe Perreault and you think of Edstrom and you think of Will Cooley, that's going to have to play up, and Carrick. And so there is Schneider on defense going to have to play a much bigger role. There is a lot of changes when you look at that roster. They added, you know, JT Miller, which is a big piece in the middle. Let's talk. We were talking about, is JT Miller a center? Because he's not on the top 20 list. So I think JT Miller is a center. I think he should be on the top 20 list. But anyway, they are much different on October 7th than they were last year on October 7th.
So what are they?
They're a playoff team.
Yeah?
They should be. I think that their big problem last year, and that's something that has been following Peter Laviolette now for a few years, is their five-on-five play, their zone, their man-to-man coverage in the defensive zone, the amount of high-danger chances that they give up. It's going to be a completely different-looked Rangers with Mike Sullivan. Mike Sullivan has more of a zone mentality, a much more defense-first mentality than Peter Laviolette did. The only thing, the reason the Rangers even got the 85 points last year is because Igor Shesterkin saved them on most nights, because they gave up what they were 30th in high-danger chances against last year at 5-on-5. Like, you're thinking San Jose and Chicago, those teams were like 31st and 32nd, but the Rangers were 30th in high-danger chances against at 5-on-5 last year. Without Shesterkin, they wouldn't have even been close to 85 points and close to a playoff spot.
They've missed and made the playoffs four times in the last 8 years. A qualifying round, a first-round loss, and, of course, two trips to the conference finals. But still, only 50% success rate getting there over the last 8 years, and they're on their fifth coach in 9 years. Does this surprise you?
Yes, it does, because I feel like the roster is a roster that, if I'm a coach, I would like to have that roster and say, I'm going to build it. I'm going to be there for a long time with the Panarin and the Zibanejad and the Lafreniere, who was a first overall pick, and on the back end, and with a goalie like Shesterkin. Usually you get a goalie like Shesterkin, you have the coach stay forever. You get a good goalie, you get a good coach. Look at Winnipeg, right? Winnipeg has had Hellebuck, and they had, you know, Bonus. He retired. So, but he'd still probably be there. Scott Arnold takes over.
They had somebody quit first.
They had Paul Maurice quit. You're right. But Paul Maurice, same thing. Paul Maurice would probably still be there in Winnipeg if he didn't just say,
cupless.
He'd be cupless, maybe. You're right. But, you know, those great coaches, they have longevity because they have a great goalie. Mm-hmm. And New York has had a great goalie. And who did they go? They went from Gerard Gallant to, before that was Quinn. Gallant, yep. They had Laviolette, and now they got Sullivan. Like, I mean, that's a quick turnaround when you look at coaches that have had the luxury of having one of the best in net in Igor Shesterkin.
Okay, speaking of Shesterkin, who will be 30 years of age in December, this is year one at 11.5. We've never seen it before. This big a ticket for a goalie.
Well, luckily for him, Sergei Bobrovsky now dismantled the whole you can't win a cup with a 10 million plus goalie, right? Because it was Carey Price and Bobrovsky, and it was like, you can't win the cup with a $10 million goalie. Well, you know what? Bobrovsky did it the last 2 years, and it's fine now. I still have Shesterkin as the best goalie in the National Hockey League. So he's number one. I know Connor Hellebuck won the MVP last year in the Hart and won the Vezina back-to-back years. Vasilevskiy's still in the conversation as one of the best, but I have Shesterkin as number one. And so to me, is he full value at 11.5, 100%. I would take him at that price tag. I don't care if he's 30 and it's year one of a long-term contract.
I do.
You're worried?
His quality starts percentage has gone down four straight years or three straight years after his best year ever.
Okay, well, I'm going to...
And last year was troubling at times. I mean, I get
either
it.
Either was terrible or it was great. That was him last year.
As evidenced by the Sabres season series
Yes. And
the blowouts, right? I mean, I'm with you. I think it might actually come down to, like, if it was one game, I might take Shesterkin right now because I like him as much as you do. But I am concerned about the 286 and the 905 last year, especially, like, if this was a five-year deal... Maybe I wouldn't feel this way.
Yeah.
But my goodness, it's an 8-year deal that's starting in his age 30 season.
Okay. So I'll pose this little this or that for you. You mentioned Shesterkin's decline a little bit over the last, you know, couple of seasons. So who are you more worried about? Shesterkin's trend the last few years or Zibanejad's trend the last 4 years? Because Mika Zibanejad went from 81 to 91 and it was like, woohoo, Zibanejad is a top player. Then he went to 72 points and 62 points last year. I'm more concerned about Zibanejad than Shesterkin, but those are the two big questions for the Rangers.
They all go hand in hand based on age. So yep. Zibanejad's 32 and JT Miller's 32 and Miller, it needs to be, you know, like, yes, he had a dip after a massive year in Vancouver. But really, if you lump the last 5 years, you're going to find JT Miller as one of the top scoring players in the NHL. So there's not as much worry for me there. Both Miller and Zibanejad have 5 more years to go on their current deals at 8 or north of 8. Mm-hmm. I think the way I would view Zibanejad, and he is the first name I had on here, so I am as concerned as you. I don't see Zibanejad as a 90-point player again, but I can live with and could have always lived with him being a 75-point player. So his challenge now is to not regress to annually being a 60-point player like he was last year and just move the needle back up. And that part of it's going to come from what do we get from Artemi Panarin in his final year before UFA and all that young depth that we saw such promise from in the form of Will Cooley and Brodzinski was good, I thought, late in the year. And the other, like you say, the draft picks and who can push and perhaps elevate this group. And how hard is that to do in potentially a more defensive, your words, set up under Mike Sullivan. So there's a lot to measure here with the Rangers, but it's going to be less about individuals and more about the team.
You're right.
Right?
Like if Zibanejad is 65 points, but the team is 105 points second in the Metro. And like, I'm like, okay, that's fine because the team's playing better. Mm-hmm. Right. And they maybe there's a different focus. Now you just mentioned another. So we talked Zibanejad concern. We talked Shesterkin and the big number, the contract, right? And the $11.5 million entering year one at 30 of an 8-year deal. But Artemi Panarin, you mentioned, Panarin had a great season last year, 89 points, 37 goals. Could he be a 40-goal scorer? Yes. Could he get 90-plus points? Yes. When or will they give him an extension? When you look at Artemi Panarin, he's 33 years old, so he would be 34 years old, probably still producing at a level where they can pay him $12, $13, $14 million. Mm-hmm. But 34 years old is a dicey little proposition there. So that's
or
a big question.
Or it's not when you look at Ovi and Crosby.
Yeah, and the bread man is a little bit like Sid and the way that he plays, right? Yeah. Like he's a little dirty. He can swing the stick. He's a little thicker than you would think of him when you watch him play. Mm-hmm. But he knows how to find his spots, right? So But that's the big question now. Well, if you're Chris Drury and the Rangers, are you going to look to extend Artemi Panarin in season, or you're waiting until later in the year, maybe after the year, to do it?
What would he fetch at the deadline?
He would fetch, oh, well, I mean, the conversation around Mitch Marner last year, remember, like, Mitch Marner, would he be traded at the deadline? And then there was a potentially a Mikko Rantanen deal, right, with Carolina, that Marner said, I don't want to go to Carolina. I understand he didn't want to go anywhere. His wife was pregnant and they were having a baby. Didn't want to have to move in that time. But I think you're looking at Panarin, the same return that a Mitch Marner was going to get last year at the deadline. So you're thinking a top-end player, like a Natchez or a Rantanen or somebody like that, a first-round pick, and potentially a conditional first-rounder. You're looking at three massive pieces.
Mm-hmm. Producer Jeff, quick to clarify, Panarin may be thick, but not as thick as Ovi.
He's not as thick, yeah. Thick or thin. You know, that's the two, this or that and tick or tin are the big French language words spoken in the locker room.
We encourage you to tick with us as we continue along. But most importantly, I knew there was a T factoring in here. The Sabres are joining forces with Topps Friendly Markets to wind down summer. And some exciting things to do here at these Topps locations. And the first event is tonight at Topps on Transit in Lancaster, with future stops coming up on Maple Road in Amherst on the 27th, Orchard Park Road in West Seneca. We've collected a few turkeys there over the years on September 3rd, and Elmwood Avenue in Buffalo on September the 10th. So how it plays out, you go there 4:30 to 7, you can spin a prize wheel for fun giveaways, enter an exclusive sweepstakes for home opener tickets and signed jerseys. And Marty's favorite part, test your skills at the inflatable hockey shot. Visit sabres.com/tour. There's another T word for more details. And you know what one of my favorite birthdays of this day that we'll get to? Toe Blake, next on Sabres Live.
Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Marty, we got to do this quick. You did not add your three centers that should have been on the top 20 center list.
So Tage Thompson was off my center list because he's not a center. Celebrini and Sam Bennett were not on my top 20. Bennett, I debated. So I have JT Miller that was added to the top 20 for me. I have Dylan Strome. I can't believe Dylan Strome did not factor in the top 20 list. The season he had in Washington.
Yeah, hurry up.
And John Tavares was the other one that I put on the list as a top 20 center. So there you go.
Former Sabres with a birthday on this day. Brandon Davidson, cancer survivor, Czech League champion last year, age 33. So happy birthday to Brandon. And yes, in my research, I found that Toe Blake was born on this day in 1912. He passed in 1995. You know how many cups Toe Blake won as a player and a coach?
Nine.
He won three as a player. And then when he went into coaching, he won the cup in his first 5 years in a row with Montreal.
So he got eight. Okay, so that was close.
He added more after that. He ended up with three as a player and eight as a coach for 11 total. Oh. And it sent me down the Jacques Plante rabbit hole because Jacques was the goalie for all five of those cup wins, the only team to ever win five in a row. And, of course, he won the Vezina 5 years in a row. And I don't even have time to tell you how stupid his numbers were, playoffs and regular season combined over that time. So the final 20 goes to you.
A final 20 to me. 38 years ago today, Duffer, Dirty Dancing was released in theater. So a great soundtrack. I recommend if you're doing some yard work, turn the speakers towards the windows, put it in the headphones, and crank it up. Everybody's going to love it.
I hate to say this, but it feels like it should have been more than 38 years ago. That's how old I am. See you tomorrow.